This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. COVID-19 has only been around for a few months, and as with any new disease, there is still a lot we don't know. But there are some facts that we can state definitively. So we're going to spend some time now addressing some of the truths and falsehoods about the virus, including some dangerous information spread by President Trump. Here to help us is Dr. Ashish Jha once again. He's director of the Harvard Global Health Institute. Good to have you back.
Thank you for having me back.
Let's start with the president's comments last night, because he mentioned two possibilities for treating COVID-19. Today, he says he meant this sarcastically, but both of the things he mentioned could be extremely harmful, perhaps even deadly. Here's the first part of what he said.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way.
This idea actually adheres closely to many questions that people have asked us about COVID-19. Here's one of several questions we've gotten from listeners along these lines.
This is Earl Goodman in Tulsa. And my question is, what is known about the use of UV light to fight the coronavirus? And are there any benefits to the usage?
Dr. Jha, what, if anything, is known about the use of UV light to treat COVID-19?
So there's no evidence that UV light is at all helpful for treating COVID-19. Now, what we know is when the virus is on surfaces, let's say on a table or on a chair or a plastic bag, when it's exposed to UV light, it tends to last less long or sort of degrades a bit faster. But there's no evidence whatsoever, and it wouldn't really make any clinical sense that you could treat the coronavirus by exposing human beings to UV light.
Because could
you'd
it do
also
any
have
harm?
To kill. Yeah, absolutely. So you'd have to kill a lot of very healthy cells to maybe have some impact on the virus. It's hard for me to imagine how it would have benefit, but I can easily imagine how it would be very harmful.
Okay, to talk about one of the president's other comments, I want to bring another expert into the conversation. Dr. Rutherford Rose is director of the Virginia Poison Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. Thank you for being here.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so another dangerous idea the president brought up involved disinfectants. Here's what he said.
I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning?
Today, various companies that produce cleaning products put out statements saying people should not inject cleaning products into their bodies. Dr. Rose, what would happen if someone actually did that?
That would not be very good. We have seen patients do that for self-harm in the past, and they can cause a lot of damage to the local tissues around the injection site and can also cause damage to internal organs, including the brain. So it's something that we clearly would want people not to do.
Are there other warnings that you would want to give people concerned about COVID-19, things they might be considering that would actually do more harm than good to the body?
Well, any time you have a household product, it's very important that you follow the directions of that product, and that would mean properly diluting concentrated solutions. Because if you dilute them, to the proper concentration that's used to decontaminate or disinfect. But if you don't, you can certainly cause a great deal of harm. So there's no benefit to leaving them more concentrated. I think it's very important for people to understand that a household product is meant for the household. It is not a personal care product, and in no way, shape, or form should it be considered any type of a medicine. And so it's just important to read the label and follow directions. And just because a chemical might be used in people, and the same chemical might be used in a different form in some other type of product, that doesn't mean they're interchangeable. And there have been several examples of a great deal of harm caused because people used a commercial product, industrial type product, and used it in themselves.
Okay, Dr. Rutherford Rose is director of the Virginia Poison Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. Thank you for the guidance tonight. I appreciate it.
You're certainly welcome.
Dr. Ashish Jha is still with us, and if you have questions for him, send them to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or on Twitter. Use the hashtag NPRConversation. And our next question comes from Shauna in Eastridge, Tennessee.
Given the information to now, how is it that we trust China for anything? How do we know COVID-19 was not something released on purpose?
How do we know it was not released on purpose? This idea has been echoed by a number of media figures on the right. Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas suggested the virus could have been developed in a Chinese lab. Dr. Jha, truth squad this for us. Is there any evidence to support this idea?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm skeptical of a lot of data that comes out of China on this virus, number of cases, deaths, etc. But on the issue of the origin of the virus, there is pretty strong consensus among scientists in the U.S. and the U.K. elsewhere that this had natural origins, and that's really not because we're trusting the Chinese. We're looking at the genetic makeup of the virus. We're looking at genetic makeup of viruses that affect bats. It doesn't look like it was created by a human. It really looks like it was a natural jump from bats, most likely bats, to humans. So this is not based on the trust of the Chinese. This is based on looking at the virus and its genome.
All right. Many people have asked us questions about COVID-19 possibly being transmitted through blood. Here's one of them.
My name is Terry Fullerton, and I'm calling from Abilene, Texas. And I was wondering if there's been research on whether mosquitoes can infect a person with COVID-19 if it has bitten someone who is positive.
In addition to that question, which we've gotten several times, many people have asked us about the safety of donating blood, whether there's a risk of COVID contamination. Is blood a way that this disease can be transmitted?
So theoretically, absolutely. You'd have to have, let's talk about the mosquito thing for a second. I think there are no known cases that I know of somebody getting it from a mosquito, and you'd have to have pretty high levels of virus in your blood in order for this to happen. In terms of from blood transfusions, blood banks are moving towards testing blood products. There is a risk, I think, there for somebody who might have virus in their blood. But again, the number of times that this has happened, we don't think this is a major mode of transmission. So mosquitoes, I wouldn't worry about at all. Blood transfusions, I think, were really on the way towards making sure that the blood product remains safe and is not a major source of infection.
Let's just quickly squeeze in one more question from Darren in Ann Arbor, who is worried about misinformation about the 5G network.
Please research and cover a growing national story regarding the connection between 5G and coronavirus. In my experience, the story is circulating person to person in business and residential communities and is also being spread via social media.
Just in a few seconds before we have to take a pause, any connection between 5G cell phone technology and COVID-19?
Short answer, absolutely not. No evidence. You know, there's been a pandemic of misinformation as well as a pandemic of a virus here, and 5G theories are certainly one of them.
Dr. Ashish Jha, director of the Global Health Institute at Harvard University, is going to be answering more of your questions. You can submit them at npr.org/nationalconversation or on Twitter with the hashtag NPRConversation. We're going to take a quick pause. Stay with us.